Genesis chapter 12. I said we are getting ready for revival. We want to prepare our hearts for God to work and do something. And we decided to look at the life of Abraham. Are we up there? All right. Here we go with this now. Might steal your Sunday school podium, brother, on Wednesday nights. All right, we said that what is a picture of spiritual testing? What do we say was a picture of spiritual testing? Christian? Famine, that's exactly right. Famine is oftentimes a picture of spiritual testing. We gave some examples of that last week, and we looked at that in the life of Abraham. And Abraham went where after this famine came into the house of bread? Where did he go? What's that? Somebody said it. Hannah, I thought I saw you. Were you yawning, or did you say something? Oh, she was yawning. All right. Egypt. He went where? To Egypt. He went down into Egypt. We said Egypt is a picture of what? What? The world. Okay. If I see your lips moving, if I see you, be careful, itching your nose. This is like an auction, all right? And listen, you may not even do anything, and I'll still call on you. We just want to have a time of just back and forth, okay? And I appreciate that. So Egypt is a picture of the world. That's the last place that Abram should have been going at this point. Abram should have been trusting God. He should have been thinking about how God could deliver him. We're going to begin in verse 1 of chapter 12 again, or not verse 1, excuse me, verse 10. You'll remember verse 1 really was the beginning of God giving the Abrahamic covenant again to Abraham. And just 10 verses later, we see him maybe just forgetting all about the promises that God has given to him. And we liken that to ourselves. So often, we know God's promises. We talked a lot about the different promises that God has given to us and how quickly we forget. So before we jump on Abram's case just too quick, let's make sure that we are willing to hold on to God's promise and learn from his mistakes. We're going to start in verse 10 again and move on from there. Verse 10 of Genesis chapter 12. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai his wife, Behold now, I know thou art a fair woman to look upon. Wouldn't it be great if there was a period after that instead of a colon? I mean, that Abram is recognizing and declaring the beauty of his wife. I mean, that we just went through Valentine's Day, and what a great picture. And I'll tell you, it would have been wonderful, wonderful, if he would have just stopped right there. But he didn't. Tonight I want to talk about, I was not supposed to say focus. How do I change that? We're going to make a quick adjustment here on the fly. We have the technology to do this even from an iPad. This is amazing. Slow motion for those of you that know how to operate one of these. What? Now, from current. Perfect. We can even back up. Now, what is keeping your eyes on God? Yeah. Listen, I knew some guys in school that still failed after having the answers, all right? Faith. Faith is simply keeping your eyes on God. When Peter was out in the on the sea and the waves were coming up, he was fine. Peter was walking on the water. Until what happened? He took his eyes off the Lord. Faith is just simply keeping your eyes on God. So, we see right here, his first bad decision led to another bad decision. There is a downward spiral that we are getting ready to experience with him as we read his story. And so often, maybe you're a parent and you see a child, perhaps you're a teacher or a professor, and you have a student, or it could be just someone in your family, and you start seeing them make We say they're starting to make some bad choices. What are we really saying? They're on their way to destruction. And maybe you talk to them, you pray for them, you beg them to go in a different direction, you share scripture with them, but sometimes they just have their minds set. And sometimes, whether they realize it or not, some of the decisions they've made have already set the plate for them to make further decisions, whether they want to or not. So often you can see somebody that used to go to church, that used to be faithful, maybe growing up in church, and then you see them 10 years later, and they don't want anything to do with God, they don't want anything to do with church. And if you would have asked them 10 years earlier, would you want to be an infidel unbeliever? They wouldn't have said, yeah, I'm just waiting for the day where I can make it known. Not most of the time, okay? But it's by degrees. It's one step at a time, and it's one step at a time until they come to the point where their sinful life and the things that has happened in their life, they just come to the place where I don't even know if there is a God, right? I think we've all known of some instance like that is heartache. But here we see, I don't know why I just about said Noah, but Abram making one bad decision after another. And so he said, he tells his wife, you're beautiful. But verse 12 goes on to say, therefore it shall come to pass when the Egyptians shall see thee that they shall say, this is his wife. And they're going to kill me. They will kill me. But they will save thee alive. You know what happened? The closer Abram got to Egypt, the bigger those pyramids began to get, the smaller his God began to get. And I think in our own lives, so often when we are walking no longer by faith, but we're walking by doubt, there's something behind every tree. There's something ready to get us. There's some financial monster that's going to destroy us. There's just something that we're afraid of. Even men, we have, we don't think of it as fear, but we don't want this to happen. You know, we don't want our 401ks or our Roth IRAs or whatever you may have stuffed under the mattress to burn up or to go down. You know, ladies, they don't want something bad to happen, right? Every door is locked and checked before you go to bed. That's not a lack of faith, by the way, right? Jeremy, you had a whole lot more than just a couple of locks on the door down in Brazil, didn't you? You had a dog? Did you have a dog? Okay. I know Omar had a dog, and I don't remember in your place, but the wall, did you have the broken bottles on the top? Electric wire, all right. I'm not going to ask the voltage on air here, okay? We'll find out later. He said it's painful. You wouldn't want to be a part of that, all right? So Abraham makes this great observation. Honey, you are beautiful. Now, I don't want you to raise your hands, but ladies, how many of you want to hear your husband say that and believe it? Do you think Abraham believed that? Yeah, he believed it to the point where he thought somebody was going to kill him in order to get his wife. He truly believed his wife was beautiful. And that's really a compliment. Like I said, if it would have stopped there. Fellas, don't be afraid to tell your wife that you think she's beautiful. But then he, in verse 13, he takes a horrible... Look at that one. Technology. I'm going to cover it up. In verse 13, he says, say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. You know, he says to Sarah, listen, where we're going, they make widows there. They could very well kill me because of your beauty. Now, if you know the story, you'll understand that even at the height of his deception, he was not going to be killed. As a matter of fact, he was chastised by an unsaved king for his lack of candor and truth. How many times, you know, Abram could have justified this lie because in essence it was a half-truth. Sarai was his half-sister. And I'm not going to get all into it, but in that day that was not a terribly uncommon thing. But I wonder how many times we have shaded the truth. How many times we have misdirected someone in our own minds, justified the action, believing that a half-truth is good. As I was putting this together, I said, Lord, I'm pretty sure I just went through lying not that long ago. But I'm committed to preach through the whole counsel of God. And I just was thinking, what are some different areas in which we lie? Why do we lie? You know the first recorded lie in the Bible? Does anybody have an idea where that is, John? He was itching his nose. That's close enough to a hand raise. That's what I think, right? Genesis 3, 4, and 5, and the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die, for God doth know in the day that ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. Has God ever approved of lying? Has he ever said, listen, it's okay in this instance or in that instance? I've had some people come and tell me, what about the Jews? What about those that were hiding the Nazis? And that's all up for debate. But as I said the other day, I know this, in our dispensation, in the circumstances we find ourselves, God wants us to tell the truth, period. And so what happens is if we decide that the people we're talking to don't deserve the truth, then really, I'll just be honest, we're no better than Muslims who are given permission to lie to infidels to further their cause. There should be a distinct difference between Christians and the rest of the world. Honesty has always been a hallmark of Christianity. God said it way back in Exodus chapter 20 when he was giving the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not bear false witness. Don't lie. Leviticus, he says, you shall not steal, neither deal falsely, neither lie one to another. Proverbs 12:22. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. I want you to think about that. Liars are an abomination to God, but people that tell the truth are his delight. Does God delight in your speech? Does he delight in what you have to say to others? Or when you open your mouth, does he just say, what an abomination? Now that's kind of harsh, but that's what God's word says. You know, you can put in your profession of distaste, but I've always heard, you know, how do you know if a lawyer is lying? His lips are moving, right? That's a terrible testimony to have. It shouldn't be your testimony. Shouldn't be my testimony. People shouldn't question. I wonder if she's telling the truth. I wonder if he is telling me the truth. Your testimony should be that even if it's harmful to yourself, even if it puts you at jeopardy, that you are going to determine to tell the truth. Do you know, I believe that we are no ever more closer to being like Satan himself than when we are lying. John 8, 44 and 45 says, you're of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth because there is no truth in him. And when he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own. For he is a liar and the father of it. And because I tell you the truth, you believe not. When you go down to the last part of the chapter, in verse 53, they begin asking Jesus, art thou greater than our father Abraham, which is dead, and the prophets are dead? Who makest thou thyself? Jesus answered, if I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father that honoreth me, of whom ye say that he is your God. Verse 55 says, Yet ye have not known him, but I know him. And if I should say, I know him not, I shall be a liar like unto you. You know what Jesus is saying? Well, let me finish it. He says, but I know him and keep his saying. What Jesus is saying, when you see he's just a master of words, but what he is saying is you're saying you know him, but you're lying. You don't know him. And just as much as you don't know him is how much I do know him. And for me to say that I know him like you know him would be a lie, because I truly know him. Jesus was willing to look at the religious leaders of his day and say, I'm not willing to be a liar, even if it makes me unpopular with the cool kids in the crowd, with the ones everyone else is looking up to, the ones that were the not just religious figures, but in a sense the political figures as well. But you know, just not Jesus, he's given us commandments as well. When you look through the epistles, in Ephesians 4:25, it says, wherefore putting away lying. It means get rid of it. And speak every man truth with his neighbor. Why? For we are members one of another. You know, we ought to be able to trust what somebody says. It used to be said, your word is your what? Bond. Your word is your bond. Now we say your signature in triplicate on a contract is barely enough to keep somebody from breaking what they said they would do. Let that not be true of us as Christians. Colossians 3:9-10 says, lie not to one another, seeing that you've put off the old man. What is he saying? He's saying, don't be surprised when the world or somebody that's not saved lies to you. Why? They're still of their father the devil, but he says it's part of the old man. Verse 10 goes on to say, or that you put off the old man with his deed. Verse 10 says, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in the knowledge after the image of him that created him. And I think we say things like little white lies, and we'd like to justify telling untruths. We have all these different words, falsities, I've heard. Just simple lying. Just simple lying. And I'll tell you, from God's perspective, it is no small thing. Think about some of the lists that you find lying in, mostly in Revelation chapter 21, verses 7 and 8. He says, he that overcometh shall inherit all things, but I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But, in verse 8 it says, the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and the murderers and the whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars. I think even when we were studying that, I said something to this effect. I understand how all those fit together, but that seems kind of harsh for a liar to go and be a part of that list. But later on in that same verse, in verse 27, he reiterates, and there shall in no wise enter into it anything that shall defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So, what are some things that people lie about today? Now, listen, let me preface this again. If pastors only preached on the sins that they struggled with, it'd be, well, pretty broad in spectrum, okay? But if we felt like, well, I could only preach on those things I don't struggle with, we wouldn't get a lot of preaching done. So if you have an answer, it doesn't mean that you're struggling with it. We're just having a discourse back and forth, right? So what are some things, Brother Larry? Taxes. People lie, cheat, and steal on their taxes, and they justify a lot of times, right? Well, I don't want my money going to them. What are they doing with it? They're terrible. I don't even call them stewards. A steward at least has some kind of managing capability, right? You're right. So a lot of people. I read a statistic. It's an old statistic now, but it says one out of every $5, 20% of people are cheating on their taxes. One out of every $5 that comes in, there should be, or out of $4, another one should be coming in. And I read somewhere else earlier today, again, this is an older statistic, every dollar that the IRS spends on getting money is $12 in return. So every dollar they invest in getting people that are robbing and stealing on their taxes, they get a $12 return. So now you understand why the IRS is such a mammoth bureaucracy in some regards. That's good. Anybody else? He said not all, but a whole lot of social media. What do they lie about on social media? He said everything. No, he didn't. What? Yeah, I guess a lot of people are putting up a facade. Some people are talking about how wonderful their life is, and maybe they're struggling on the inside. Certainly there's a lot of politics and news on social media. If it's true, I've heard it's been banned from social media. So I don't know if that's true or not. But yes, ma'am. People lie to their boss. What do they lie about? Okay, so she said they lie at work about being late maybe, or why they didn't get done what they're supposed to get done, about being sick. Annalisa? Oh, lying to get a child's ticket or a free meal or something like that. Brother Hanky? Oh, the fulfillment that it brings, right, right. There's no such thing as truth in advertising, right? Brother Larry? Check is in the mail, right? All right. Right, right, yeah. It might be styrofoam that they've painted. And, I mean, I guess you're not going to buy something that says flavor-free on it. It does. It says fat-free on it, but they mean to say flavor-free, okay? Gino? Yes. He just said CNN. That says it all. So I have a couple things written down, and some of y'all have touched on it. Past accomplishments, resumes. They embellish those things. They say that they've done some things that they have not done. Why do people lie on their resumes? Why do they want to, or even on their Facebook page? Why is that? They want to look better than what they really are. Pride. That's really the basic motive. You just cut right to it, don't you, Brother Bill? Yes, sometimes it's a drive for more money, Doc says. They want to look bigger than they are. I read about a story many of you may remember. A lady by the name of Rachel Ann Dolezal, and she called herself Kichi Amare Diallo. I know I'm not pronouncing that right, but I'm not mispronouncing it on purpose, okay? She was, and I do say was, a college instructor and an activist, and she identified herself as a black woman. But her white parents were the ones that called her out on her lies. And as a matter of fact, she was the president of a chapter of the NAACP in Spokane, Washington from 2014 until June 2015 when she resigned amidst the controversy. It's interesting that the world is fine with somebody identifying biologically as something that's impossible, but it's not okay to identify with whatever nationality you want to identify with. But she lied about that because it gave her some advantage. So oftentimes people lie in order to gain some realized advantage that they do not think they would get unless they lied. So some kind of realized advantage. What about people that are hiding something? Maybe they're involved in pornography. Maybe something more serious. You go along the top 10, murder, adultery, robbery. People usually don't go around. Well, some people do foolishly brag about that, and they get in trouble when they do. But a lot of people will lie for what we would call, or what the world would call, self-preservation. They don't want to receive bad consequences for something they have already done. Now, the list that I'm giving to you is not exhaustive today, but my idea, and just not just talking about what lies, but why people lie, is because we'll find ourselves in these situations in some way. And if we will understand that there is something coming that's going to give us pressure and a temptation to lie, we can say, God, no matter what, by your grace, I'm going to tell the truth. And I'm identifying this as a pressure on me, but I'm going to give it to you and simply tell the truth. You say, what happens if I tell the truth and it costs me my job? And so there's a something about self-preservation. I want you to think about Abraham going in and telling a lie because he didn't trust God. And you say, oh, Abraham, all you had to do was trust God. My friend, you may lose your job, but you'll keep your integrity. And it is worth telling the truth. It is always worth telling the truth. We talked about taking credit at work or cheating on your taxes or even on an exam or a homework, getting an undue advantage. I think about college scholarships. I think there was a whole big scandal not that long ago about people buying their kids a position on a rowing team. I don't even think they knew how to swim. I don't know. But they were looking for some kind of advantage. I think some people... Oh, I had another note written. Give me just a second because I'm doubling up on something. We talked about... I think when I talk about that woman that identified as something she was not, I think sometimes we lie because we have a fear of rejection. We want to be accepted. We want to be able to have others think better of us. So we talked about others thinking better or not getting rejected. We talk about avoiding negative consequences. We talk about getting an undue advantage. There is a prominent senator that was able to get a professorship at an Ivy League college because she kept writing that she was Native American. She ran for Congress and got a DNA test, and that really didn't help her a whole lot. But I think a lot of people lie to advance an agenda. Their agenda. I don't know how many frontline, top of the page news articles that I have seen in my lifetime, even as a Christian, that completely debunks creation. I mean, it solidifies the foundation and proof of evolution, undisputable. And within a day, oftentimes, or at least by the end of the week, there's a retraction on page 13b, right? But they know, I believe oftentimes they know that it's wrong initially. But what are they doing? They're just putting and trying to reaffirm a lie that is out there from the father of lies. So there is an agenda. Well, why is it that the world will not allow any kind of abortion to be seen or not just to be seen, but really to be discussed at a biological level? Because there is an agenda behind that. You say, are you a conspiracist? I know this. There is someone that is orchestrating the world system. There is a conspiracy behind everything that is worldly and sensual and devilish. That last one's a little bit of a hint. What about those people that lie not because they are compulsive liars, not because they are, really, let me just put it this way. Do people lie in order not to hurt other people's feelings? I think so. I know so. Experientially. Sometimes we might say something like this. It's not your fault. What is that? That's enabling, oftentimes, bad behavior. We don't want to hurt their feelings and say, yes, this is your fault. You need to make changes. We might say things like, you couldn't help it. That's a lie. If you know that's not true and you're just trying to help somebody to feel better, find another way. Speak the truth in love. Don't lie to enable somebody to make poor and bad decisions. Don't ask me about the dress and how I look. I'm not reached perfect sanctification yet, okay? You say, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, let me just tell you about a story about a 1983 National Spelling Bee instead. It was held in Washington, D.C., and a 13-year-old Andrew Flosdorf, of Fonda, New York, listen to what he did. He eliminated himself from the contest when he informed the judges that he had misspelled echolalia. E-C-H-O-L-A-L-I-A. I don't know how he misspelled it, but that is the correct word. I don't even know what it means. The judges didn't catch the mistake. And nobody could understand why would he disqualify himself. And I love his response. He said, I didn't want to feel like a slime. You know, you may not like the consequences from telling the truth, but you will like being able to pillow your head at night, having integrity, being righteous, and being right. Not Abram, he just didn't lie. He planned it out. He wanted an accomplice. I mean, he was had the promises of God. His future, we say, was as bright as the promises of God. He goes to the wrong place and starts doing the wrong things. I just want to challenge you tonight to be truth tellers. Wherefore, put away lying. Speak every man and woman and child truth with his neighbor. Colossians says, put away the old man and just simply tell the truth. Now, I don't agree with Abram going down to Egypt, but even if he makes that terrible decision, could he have seen the power of God work in a miraculous way if he would have said, now, Sarah, they're going to think you're beautiful when we get down there. Stay close to me, and I'll let them know you're my wife. And I'll protect you, dear, the best I can. I think God would have put a hedge of protection about him. Now, I'm not the Holy Spirit, and I can't see all the alternate decisions that could ever be made. But I know God well enough to know that he keeps his promise, and he had promised Abram some very specific things. My friends, let's just trust God. Take him at his word and tell the truth, even if we don't like the possible consequences. And I believe God will bless that. It may be that is an impetus for us getting right and leaving out of Egypt. Or it may be that God will show himself strong in some other way. Let's be truth.